Good morning, everybody. My name is Hanif Khomik, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Matlan Mata. Good morning,
Chair. Good morning, Kabir. sitting in the Parliament and promoted our committee for the meeting. Good morning, my name is Chai Sabat, I'm a member of the school.
We will then allow the recipients to check up to
good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member. My name is Connie Newman. I'm the DVG responsible for Wi-Fi services at which we are the first body attached to the branch. And I'm with my school here. I've got the Deputy Chairperson of the Central Drug Authority, woman the baby there, who will be leading us with the presentation. Finally, I've got Lucian Shochista from our legal unit. Next to me, I've got Ms. Lisa Makamu, who is the Chief Director for Substance Abuse and Social Planning Department of Social Development. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Sir, Honorable Chair,
who is the Secretariat of the Central Drug Authority.
I'm small con from business.
Can you read from the traditional and natural health line?
Good morning, I'm Soren Wayne from the Anthropocene Board Foundation.
Good morning, I'm Paolo from the Production Institute.
Good morning, I'm Moni from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, my name is Chris and I'm from CBNet.
Good morning, I'm from the Chief Academy.
Good morning, Jason Hughes, I'm from the Chief
Academy. Thank you, Honourable Members. I think we are all aware that it is not the first time that we are getting presentations on this matter, which is in front of the Control Committee on Health, which I'm understanding that all of us are aware of the background, and therefore the Federal Drug Authority was also one of the institutions or entities that were to come and make a presentation in front of the committee. And that is why then we were aware that they were supposed to come at a time, sometime in June. Unfortunately, they couldn't because of their logistical challenges and for the organizational challenges. But we are happy that you have come so that we are. We all have a understanding and to take this work forward. So we are going to give you that opportunity to take us through. I'm of the understanding that I hope all members do have the copy of the presentation. Am I correct? So that we don't start a speaker. Okay, all members, you have the copy of the presentation. We will then allow whoever who has been charged with that responsibility to take us through and over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning to all the colleagues. I was here on the 12th of June, and unfortunately the program didn't allow, but just to record that I was here. And thank you for the opportunity from the Central Drug Authority to now address you and to bring you up to date with the decision in terms of what the Central Drug Authority is putting forward. The purpose for us being there obviously is to provide the Central Drug Authority's opinion on medical innovation mode and to explain to you that within our mandate there are certain functions that we have to fulfill as the Central Drug Authority. The most important one being to ensure the development of an effective strategy on prevention, early intervention, reintegration and aftercare services, which is what speaks to the delays that we're having at the present moment. And the second point there is to advise government on policies and programs in the field of substance abuse and drug trafficking. And that is part of a mandate that the Civil Drug Authority has in terms of the bill that we are constituted under. We also recommend then to Parliament the review of the National Drug Master Plan in 5 years, and included in those issues in the National Drug Master Plan are issues around harm reduction and also all the other issues dealing with substance abuse in general. But as I said, the most important being advising on issues that are pertinent for discussion at the moment. From our perspective, we understand of the purpose of the Medical Innovation Bill is to make provision for the innovation in medical treatment and also to legalize the use of cannabis for medical purposes and beneficial commercial and industrial uses. And at this point, I would like to say that from the Civil Drug Authority's perspective, what we are very, very concerned about is that we separate the two issues. If we are talking about the provision for the innovation of medical treatment, then clearly we're talking about marijuana, the drug, as opposed to the legalization of the use of cannabinoids for medical purposes and beneficial commercial and industrial, which is marijuana, the plant. And from our perspective, we need to separate the two issues and deal with the substantive issue as far as we are concerned, which is for the medical treatment, and to deal with it in that perspective. In order to do that, we held a round table where we invited a number of people to give us an opportunity to have a broad representation from a grassroots level right up to the academic level to debate the question on the safety and the dangers of cannabis use in South Africa, and more importantly, to address the medicinal use of cannabis as opposed to the recreational use, which is something for a separate debate. And I'm just re-emphasizing our perspective that two have to be dealt with separately. The evidence-based and research support debate on the medicinal use of cannabis was the actual theme of the debate, and that was in order to shed light on the properties of the chemicals residing in cannabis, and that is opposing the THC as versus the CBD, which you're all familiar with by now. At the same time, we wanted to use the roundtable debate to help the Central Drug Authority to formulate a position paper on cannabis to present to Parliament and to present to our Minister. And that was the focus of the actual round table. In summary, I'll just go through some of the most important salient points which came out, which has been highlighted here. Generally, cannabis is the gateway drug of any country, and this is reporting from the debate, and these are the issues that came up during the debate, and these are some of the findings that we have so far as a result of the debate that took place. The fact that as a Section 21 application, people do have access to cannabis for medicinal purposes, and when I was here last time, I remember that the MCC spoke about the fact that it can be used and that there were facilities for a Section 21 to be granted in order for it to be used for medicinal purposes. Cannabis can be used for research and medicinal purposes, and this was highlighted by Dr. Washam Lai, whose presentation from the INCB at the last meeting that was on the 12th of June, I think it was, really explained that there is provision for it to be used for medicinal purposes to have research done around that particular issue. There is a need to strengthen community education and awareness on cannabis for medicinal use, and this is clearly something that has been brought out by the fact that the message that is going through, particularly to our youth at the present moment, is because of what is happening in other parts of the world, where the decriminalization or legalization or the allowing of medicinal use to be used is sending a message to the youth in particular that this is a soft drug, and therefore we should be dealing with it similarly in South Africa. The context in which we are talking about in South Africa is very different to what is in other parts of the world, and we need to be very, very clear that we understand that the message, unfortunately, that is going out to our youth at the moment requires us to strengthen the awareness and education that needs to go around from our particular context of what is happening with medicinal use. Parenting is then key for modeling and shaping behavior of the young people who are vulnerable to cannabis use and abuse, and as I think this is fueled by what is happening in other parts of the world where they are using that as an opportunity to say, this is the soft drug. Scientific investigation needs to be conducted to develop medicinal or medication using cannabis without the THC. Or if it's going to be used with the THC, because there is evidence to show that there needs to be a combination of both CBD and THC in order for it to be highly effective or more effective,
the concentration of the CBD as opposed to the concentration of creatine that needs to be adjusted as well. And for that, there is a need for more investigation to take place. Cannabis is an integral part of some religious, cultural, and traditional practices for which we have to be sensitive as well, and that was also brought out in the round table. Currently, there's no comprehensive cost analysis conducted in South Africa on the economic implications of cannabis use. And this is something that we also recognize at the round table as being an issue that we need to look at in terms of, again, in our South African context, to what extent this is admissible or not. It is critical to measure the effectiveness of existing cannabis-related treatment programs. And one of the issues that we need to recognize is that, unfortunately, we do not have enough facilities for the treatment. And that's the harm reduction program that we're talking about in terms of those people who, having been exposed and fallen to the genetic predisposition that they might have, the problems associated with cannabis use, how are we going to then be able to deal with them? And that is where a critical measure analysis needs to be done as well. We need to consider alternative use of cannabis and how this can contribute to the economy, recognizing that there is plenty of research to show that there are certain varieties that can be used for other than smoking, recreational, medicinal use, which would have other implications, and we need to look at that as well. Accurate information about the medical use of cannabis should be disseminated through the various media platforms, and there are well-articulated and divergent views on criminalization, decriminalization, legalization, and that was clearly brought out during the course of the roundtable as well. The summary in general then for the roundtable that was conducted was a need for more conversation and understanding of the divergent views, and that means that there's lots more debate that still needs to take place before a final decision can be taken. The commission of the position paper for the country on cannabis use and abuse is required, and information informed by international, national, and regional developments that have taken place. But we insist, and we are particular about the fact that it needs to be evidence-based. The National Drug Master Plan, which guides the country, as I said before, and is revised on a regular basis, talks about the abuse of substances should be the basis for the way in which the position paper is pressed. There are strong views around the medicinal use and the legalization of cannabis for recreational, cultural, and religious use, which is part of the debate that still needs to take place. But as I said, very beginning in the opening, if we are talking about marijuana, the drug, in other words, for treatment, then we are talking about marijuana, the drug, for treatment, and separate to the debate around recreational and other issues. The roundtable discussion provided a platform for engagement among the stakeholders of cannabis. And this we felt is important because it's not something that we can decide on our own without talking to members of the community and having the views put forward by all stakeholders in order for us to be informed in terms of the policy that needs to come to be put forward. A lot of the evidence that I'm going to be presenting here is stuff that you probably already know and has been put before this committee before, but please allow me the opportunity, not only turning to all the discussions that have taken place. In South Africa, cannabis is the most commonly listed substance amongst young people and children, and our youth are ones that we are most concerned about. We also know from evidence that is available to us that the THC potency in the South African plant is higher than in other parts of the world, which is why, again, in our South African context, we must look at this for South Africa. On average, 6.3% of South African population are users of cannabis, as opposed to the world's norm, which is sitting at 3.8% according to the United Nations. The highest, depending on the areas that we have, is at 9.1%, which is where we get this reputation of drugs being doubled in South Africa to what it is in the rest of the world. However, it's the cannabis issue that we're talking about here. There is also, from a current perspective, the fact that dronabinol, which is intended for therapeutic purposes, is available as a Schedule 7, and that is under Section 3.1, where it can be imported and can be used with the correct motivation, for which the MCC has already informed you. You then, as an appetite stimulant for nausea, vomiting, and we recognize for chemotherapy and AIDS patients in the future. There are 60 peer-reviewed studies on this, but what some of them, and the majority of them rather, should show are showing, is that only one-third of the studies have shown that there is no benefit or even no harm that can be derived from it. The benefit part is, of course, what we need to examine.
Nadia Lang is also listed in our medicines in the electrolytic of the Schedule 7 medicine, which is, as you know, the synthetic form of cannabinoid. The quadrigulatory roots protect the public from the potential abuse. And the principle that we work on is that human research must be able to prove that this is why they're using it, for what purpose they're using it. If we have a look at some of the studies that have been done, and these are the positions that were put forward at the round table, these are the issues that were brought by the experts that were talking at the round table. I've just highlighted some of them. The most important were in terms of the health issues which we were concerned about, the medicinal use. The global burden of disease study 2010, estimating the burden of disease for the drug, there's a far high number of cannabis dependent users, results in a greater global burden of disease overall. And this is as a result of the fact that there are more people who use cannabis than there are for other conditions that are treated under the burden of disease. The dependence, the lung problems, the memory impairments, psychosocial development problems, the mental health issues, the poor cognitive performances are all associated with the early initiation. And this brings me back to the point where we are talking about our concern, particularly looking after our youth and our future generations. The primary effect within the first decade may differ from the long-term impact. And increased potency leads to increased health consequences. And we have seen that this is what is happening with skunk and all these other new innovative drugs that are being brought forward, and these designer drugs that are being used in other parts of the world, and those are then leading to higher health consequences as well. Further on, the impact on health, legalization or medicinal use of smoked cannabis is likely to impose significant public health risks, including an increased risk of schizophrenia, psychosis, and other forms of substance use disorder. Just touching on this particular issue on the smoking of the plant, if we actually look what we have as a warning on all of our cigarette packs, it says this causes cancer. What we need to recognize is that if we're looking at the content of THC, or the top content as a sample of cannabis as opposed to all the tobacco, there is 50% more tar in our cannabis plant than what there is in tobacco, which also then is what then compounds the problem. If you're looking at that precursor to cancer from smoking, the benzopyrene, it's 75% higher in marijuana than what it is in ordinary tobacco that's smoked. And that is because of the fact that tobacco has gone through a process of where it's been cured, where it's been separated from the stalk and everything else. We don't have that with ordinary smoked cannabis at the present moment. And this is what this point is making, this issue is making here. All botanically based medications must have standard identity, purity, potency, and quality in order to reduce the amount of harm from smoking. Adequate directions for use, how are we going to be dosing? Well-controlled risk-benefit profiles, which needs to be discussed further. And non-smoke reliable delivery systems is what we're talking about. Non-smoke reliable delivery system. And certainly there's a lot of research that is being done here in South Africa, funnily enough at the University that I'm associated with as well, where we're talking about delivery systems and new innovative delivery systems for drugs. Such, for example, antiretrovirals, where drugs are on scaffold, giving the person one tablet a month will allow them to get a regular dose every single day based on the new reliable delivery systems that are being developed in the country. The effect on health continuing, increased cannabis potency heightens the risk of adverse events in cannabis naive patients, and that is particularly again when we're talking about those young children, those young members of our youth who have not used it before. The effect that it has on their brain is going to be very, very different to what it is to people who have been using it over a period of time. The question that was asked, can physicians base their judgment on non-evidence-based information, or is the evidence that we've got enough to be able, for them to be able to make an informed decision? No information regarding the composition, dose, side effects, or therapeutic targets is available to the practitioner, and yet the bill is asking for them to be the gatekeeper to allowing people to use marijuana. Is it fair then to impose an ethical and professional responsibility on this practitioner, on that practitioner then, as the gatekeeper? Increased potency heightens the risk of addiction, and inhalation raises the plasma and the brain level, and dose responses. In other words, it exhibits a biphasic effect. Lower doses relieve the symptoms, but higher doses can also exacerbate it. And I explained that a little bit in terms of benzopyrene as precursors to cancer for people who are using it. The global burden of disease study of PNP and also then again highlights the fact that tablets is higher than cocaine due to a higher number of users. So that might be seen as a slight distortion of the fact, but clearly something that we need to be cognizant of is that they are both recognized within the global burden of disease as impacting on diseases. There is an absence of CBD reported in cannabis from South Africa and communities in Mexico. And this very area we asked you earlier that we need to look at our content of CBD as opposed to THC in our South African context. And then why I reiterate again, looking at it in our South African context. The results also indicate that illicit substances such as cannabis have a manifold increased risk of psychopathology with adjustments of age and gender. And re-emphasizing the point that we're looking at in terms of our youth. So coming back to the issue around youth, some of the studies that were presented at the round table were this one in particular. We spoke about the adolescent substance abuse and psychiatric comorbidities. Psychiatric disorders in adolescents often predate the substance use disorder. And one of the substance use disorders is the psychiatric disorder which has been already presented to this committee. There's a third one that talks about adolescents with substance abuse and psychiatric comorbidities, a separate thing done by Jesus Brown in 2006. Another one talks about the moderation of the effect of adolescents on cannabis use on adult psychosis by a functional polymorphism of the COMT and so on. All very critical information that is available that all points to the same concern that we have in terms of adolescent use and our youth in particular. This is just another study that we've done which also talks about the gene environment interplay between cannabis and psychosis, and we highlight it again. In The Lancet, which we all recognize as being one of the most reputable journals for medicine, it talks about the adverse health effects of non-medical cannabis use. The non-medical cannabis use, we must be very sure that when we're talking that we are separating the two issues. Again, one of the issues that is reported is the allostasis and addiction. Reports on the role of dopamine and corticotropin releasing factors, where the person's normality that they're in, which is that solid line in the middle where they're normal, by using cannabis, it also then interferes with the allostasis, which is what keeps them in that normal state. But you can see how that is dropping all the time, and further illustrated in this graph over here, which is a further study that was done as well. Unfortunately, the name of the study at the top there hasn't come up yet here, and I apologize for that. Concomitant mental health disorders can't be ignored. And this is basically what we're talking about in the vision board, emphasizing that this has been discussed. There's a lot of money, I believe, at this committee, and these are the issues that we raised during our debate as well. The pre-existing peril of consequences, the large rate, not a minority, the influence negatively treatment outcomes, the integrated therapies, the psychiatrists, the psychiatrists in the clinical, which we don't have enough psychiatrists in the country, and it is a component of relapse prevention as well. The impact on the economy was another issue that was debated at the round table in terms of what are we talking about in terms of the impact on care. The study that was cited, we're talking about legislation which reduces the price over time, which means that cannabis consumption responds to price, leading unfortunately to higher consumption. And this just market forces playing its own role. An estimated 10% drop in price has been shown to have a 3-5% increase in youth initiation. And I'll come back to the point that what we are concerned about from the federal authority perspective is the impact that it's going to have, particularly on our youth. And any drop in price is going to then increase youth initiation. Requires careful monitoring to measure the effects. Play drug use occurs both recreationally and regularly. These are findings of other studies that have been done. And the tax reduced from retail cannabis sales weighted against the cost of prevention and healthcare is an economic consideration that we need to take into account particularly. The worldwide markets continue to expand and increase in the abuse will need to increase in related public health issues. And we need to measure it, particularly in terms of the fact that we already have a high prevalence of TB. We already have a high prevalence of lung condition in the country and to what extent it will impact. Substitution effects will live from Portugal. And these are findings that have been carried out by a study where they spoke about the referrals increasing from 47% in 2001 when the relaxation took place up to 65% in 2005. I'm not sure what the figure stands at the present moment, but simply what you can see is that with relaxation there were more people looking for treatment. Are we in South Africa in a position to be able to accept the need for rehabilitation and treatment of these patients? Heroin decreased by 33% to 15% over the same period of time. Tax revenue from retail cannabis sales may provide revenue offset by need to regulate the new industry. So what is gained on the one hand is lost on the other hand, and this is interesting that we need to pay attention to as well. On the criminal justice system, the possession charges can be expected to decrease, but control of cultivation, sale and distribution will require routine monitoring. Are we in a position to control the abuse of alcohol in the country at the present moment? And are we not allowing ourselves in terms of what the state is saying, another disaster? Convicted users are more likely to experience adverse employment consequences, relapse, relationship problems, accommodation difficulties. So in order to avoid this, we need to start looking at, do we have a system where we have diversion programs in place rather than incarceration? And surely that is where we should be focusing our attention initially in order to prepare ourselves for any further debate in the future. Decriminalization and legalization affect public budgets need to be balanced against the cost of prevention and health, as well as the annals of epidemiology amongst youth of 12 to 17. Cannabis usage rates were high in states where medicinal cannabis laws allowed compared to those where it didn't allow the use. The Colorado Department of Health said 2% of youth reported cancer and less than 1% reported HIV and AIDS as the reason for use. 94% reported it to be used for severe pain. And the question that is asked is, simply because pain cannot be measured. Pain is something that is subjective. So the current CBA position is, data on smoking cannabis indicates that risk factors is unhealthy. It is linked to cardiovascular and respiratory disorders, as well as to cognitive impairment and mental disorders. Secondly, given the significant public health problems represented by cannabis, particularly the high potent cannabis, its use should be prevented and it is continued use treated using evidence-based approaches for which we need to prepare ourselves. Thirdly, the components of cannabis have been suggested effective in a few medical conditions such as refractory seizures. Access to medical marijuana may therefore be needed. Finally, cannabis is safer than alcohol and many others, but does not have as many recognizable immediate effects. And the policy regarding cannabis should reflect this key thing. If I can just explain that fourth statement over there. The reason why we are saying that cannabis is safer than alcohol and many other substances but does not have as many recognizable effects is because the concept of the problems associated with cannabis is not seen immediately. A person imbibing alcohol is recognized as being under the influence immediately. Unfortunately, with cannabis, this is a long-term policy which develops only after a period of time, and therefore the damage that is being seen will not be recognized in the short term, but only in the long term. And that is why we are saying that we need to be careful about saying that it is safer, but at the same time, because of the fact that the onset of the problems associated with using are over a period of time. And that is not necessarily recognized as easy as it is with cannabis, with alcohol. So the recommendation, there are certain harms associated with marijuana. Significant scientific research has established beyond doubt that marijuana is associated with a range of potential harms. Smoking cannabis is linked to cardiovascular and respiratory disorders, cognitive impairment, mental disorders and associated neuroplasticity, for which there is no way back. And adolescents associated with high risk of psychosis in later life, and risk is dose related, and that's that psychosis in later life that we were talking about in our meeting under that fourth point previously. The high potency cannabis represents significant public health problems, and the fact is that our THC content in South Africa is much higher. Acute marijuana use associated with increased motor vehicle accidents and fatal crashes, and we already know about the carnage that we have on our roads. Marijuana use should therefore be prevented and continued use treated using evidence-based approaches. So from the harm perspective, there are also on the other side the potential benefits of marijuana use, which were also highlighted during the round table, where Dorabil and Nabilone is available. It's available in 2021. Ongoing research on the use of psychoactive ingredients in various medical conditions, including seizure disorder, pain control, and wasting, needs to be explored in further, for which there needs to be more research. establish data about the safe dose limits needs to be established, and there is a need for greater medical research, including work on marijuana, balanced against the national health research priorities, which focus on the largest contribution to medical mortality and medical morbidity. This slide over here, very, very cool slide, just to say that the master plan emphasizes the importance of supply reduction, demand reduction, and harm reduction strategies for combating tobacco, alcohol, and all substance use disorders in South Africa. And from the marijuana perspective, school survey data suggest high rates of experimentation with marijuana during early adolescence, hence evidence-based interventions that prevent and or delay the initiation of cannabis use are needed for this population. The continued and chronic use of marijuana, particularly among vulnerable groups such as adolescents and people who are at risk for mental disorders, should be treated as a priority for further discussion. And in conclusion, more research in the field is required before concluding resolutions can be taken. The standpoint from the CDA perspective is research into physiological effects and plant-derived cannabinoids is what needs to be researched. Research into symptom management for rapid onset, reliable and safe delivery systems is what needs to be researched. We need to evaluate anxiety reduction and sedation, which can influence medical benefits using clinical trials in the same way that all other drugs are subjected to clinical trials. And we define the health risks of smoking cannabis, particularly among populations in which cannabis use is prevalent. And I think that is the submission that the CDA would like to make to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now open for clarity questions from Honourable Members, Honourable Mosala, Honourable Bowman, Honourable James, Honourable Michelle.
No, thanks, Chair. I only have one question. I just want to understand, what is your honest view or opinion as an organization with regard to the innovation bill as proposed vis-a-vis or in relation to the roundtable discussion and its way forward? Way forward in relation to what actually came out from around the table discussion. That's my question.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have a comment and a question. The comment is, you spoke about the fact that there were these two layers, the non-medicinal use of cannabis and then the medicinal use. I'd argue that in fact there are actually three layers. There are those two, and then there's a third layer which doesn't speak to cannabis at all, but speaks to, for example, research hospital and which information can occur for potentially kind of life-threatening conditions. And I think that last, in mind, that last layer, they may or may not be there in terms of the presentation. I think it's important to separate that layer. I think the question I have is, you know, you present a lot about the association between cannabis use and psychopathology, but you didn't really mention anything about the carcinogenicity of cannabis. And, you know, so the question is, I mean, can you comment on inhaled cannabis smoke, either more carcinogenic, for example, than tobacco smoke, what are the health risks associated with that with regards to cancer?
Well, we won't go into that
chair.
That's what I thought today.
Yeah, then
this is
there to
my cousin.
We'll go into that debate later.
We've heard a lot about the health system. But I'd like to understand what energy is.
Are there any
In relation to your conclusion, that there is a need for a research, there is a view that a research should be conducted around the use of marijuana for medical purposes is not to be the highest priority. What do you think? Can you conduct research in this current environment?
Thank you very much, Chairman, and thank you for the presentation. I think my question hinges on what Honorable Mashalera has asked, that even looking at your presentation, and when I look at slides 13, 28, 29, 30, 32, they all talk about innovation, evidence-based approach, further research. Now, I think the purpose of this bill, when it was first introduced by Honorable Dr. Ambrosini, let it talk, whatever it is, was that there was no legal mechanism for any research institution, be it the Medical Research Council or any other research institution, to use marijuana for research, because it is banned substance, Schedule 7 substance. And I'd like to know what the TDA's view is in that regard, of having pilot health centers, which all the organs have also spoken about, to conduct this kind of evidence-based research to get support. Because international studies in many countries around the world show that medical marijuana is being used for palliative care in the US, and I'd just like your view on that.
What will then now do for you to enable you to sort out who's going to respond and what? We'll just have some 5 to 8 minutes break so that we come back and then allow you to respond.
Thank you. Yes. But it has a lot of other problems associated with it as well. For example,
if we are promoting the use of cannabis for people who are HIV positive in order to improve their appetite, one of the things that you need to recognize is that research has shown that it actually destroys the immune system over a long period of time. And these are the points that I was making earlier when I said we cannot recognize a lot of the effects in the short term that will only be obvious after a period of time. Now, treating a person for a problem which is going to exacerbate the underlying problem is problematic in itself. So we need to look at a system whereby we can extract that active ingredient which has got the true therapeutic value for which we want to use it. And that has been done. The question is, why is it not accepted in the field of people who are using those particular drugs, like I'm talking about Zanol and Labolone already? There is new research has shown that if you extract the cannabidiol, which is that therapeutic CBD that we talk about, and has the therapeutic benefit associated with it, on its own, it does not have the same effect as it has when it works synergistically with the tetrahydrocannabinol, the THC. So, the research that we are proposing, and that will be a thing that needs to take place, is looking at why is it that cannabinol, Nabilone on its own, used and is commercially available as a tablet which can be swallowed, is not having as vast an impact on the problem as what it should have if that was really where the answer lies. The answer is because that has extracted one active ingredient only and is isolated from others, and there are 85 different cannabinoids in every sample of cannabis that we have. And the one that is missing is that the THC, the tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the psychoactive part of it, needs to be there as well in order for that CBD, the cannabinol, to have its true therapeutic effect as well. So we need to re-look and re-engineer what it is that we're talking about in using this particular compound for medicinal purposes. And that's the type of research that we are proposing to be taking place. It is happening in other parts of the world already, and that's where the emphasis is now moving to. But the issue on the carcinogenic effect on the throat promotes the issue of not using it in a smoke form. How do you measure the dose? When a doctor prescribes, if you're going to take 3 cups every 4 hours and hold your breath for 10 seconds, it's the right therapeutic therapy. What we need to find a way of extracting the active ingredients, as opposed to active ingredient, as I've just explained, putting it into a delivery system where we can measure and have a true value of the content that that patient is now going to be getting. And that will give the prescriber the confidence to be able to use that drug, knowing that this is exactly what the patient is getting. And if that is what the patient needs, it would be a moral injustice on our part to deny them the benefit that could be derived from a therapeutically advantaged product, which they are being denied at the moment. But that all requires more research to be done. The question we then raise, do we have the capacity and are we allowed to do the research? My understanding of medicine-based substance control act, as well as what was explained by Dr. Lawson Niger from the International Narcotics Control Board when he was here, is that for research purposes, permission can be granted for research to be done. And provision is made in the medicine-based substance control act for that to take place. It has to be done with the permission of the Director General from the Department of Health, and under those circumstances, there is no reason why research cannot be conducted. And that is my understanding of the Act, and that is my understanding of what Dr. Nye was telling us when he was here, and I think it was on the 12th of June, if my memory serves me right. So that answers the two questions that were asked previously as to whether we can conduct research or whether we can't conduct research, and whether it can be done in a way where it can be for the benefit of humanity at the end of the day, is something that certainly the Central Drug Authority would not deny the public the privilege of getting. And we would support any research that needs to take place in order for us to come up with a conclusive standpoint as to whether it is beneficial or not. From a palliative care perspective, as I said, yes, there are issues associated with palliative care, particularly with pain control, and we are seeing that.
The problem that we have again is that neuroplasticity that is created by using it for recreational purposes. And again, it brings me to the point where we need to separate the two debates very, very clearly. If we are serious about concentrating our efforts in terms of coming up with an additional product that can benefit society based on evidence-based proper research, the same as what is done for any other drug that has now been brought to the table, then clearly we cannot, on a moral basis, deny the public that right. But it needs to be balanced in terms of true therapeutic value of what is actively involved in the cannabinoid that's going to benefit. And let's see if we can rather come up with an improved version as opposed to what we've had in the past, which is available as a Section 21 and is not, has not found favour in practice. I think having said that, we've spoken about, I think I've addressed all the questions on this. I missed something, I'd be happy to readdress it. The benefits, as I said, we know that there are benefits associated with it. We know that from a palliative care perspective, it can be used and it should be used. If we can come up with a delivery system that will ensure that we can readily acquire dose and titrate it according to the need of the patient, as opposed to allowing the person to be under the influence and they're not recognizing to what extent they are benefiting from the drug as well, which is very, very often the case.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I suppose I have a comment to make, a couple of comments. The first is that if one was to do as you say, accept the active chemical properties that are, that have a therapeutic effect, and you put through that earlier as a clinical trial, in terms of this issue with a drug that can be prescribed in measurable terms, then that would be the concept of the research, and that would be highly beneficial from the support. So that's fine. We already provide the use of medical marijuana through the Section 21 process, and what we could do is make it easier. Because simply react on the restrictions and the barriers in the way of, you know, the legal use of medical marijuana. So that can be done. I mean, we've discussed it and so on. So, okay, so that's one thing. But that doesn't tackle the issue that we're actually looking at. And this cancer treatment is a completely different thing. So if you want a country to invest in cancer treatment, rather than the modulation of pain as a consequence of medical marijuana application, because that's what it does. It's not a cure of cancer. There's no cure of cancer. So if our country wants to invest in cancers that afflict our population, given the genetic makeup of our population, then that's a completely different matter. It's expensive. In the U.S., there's a Mayo Clinic specializing in cancer. You can have a dedicated cancer center in the country. That's a massive hospital. It's very expensive. It might be worthwhile to invest in it. But the medical innovation, though, is not about that. It has both aspects in that, and it's confused as a concept. So what it needs, is, in my view, is to be simplified and directed where it can be. And then you would agree, given your approach, that it is simply to deal with medical marijuana and making it more robust and easier to access and describe and so on and so forth. Is that correct?
On the way. Thank you, sir. Thank you, it would be ironic to take the consumer and try to say you are combating chemicals while you are using carcinogens to do that. It is just not sincere. And there is no medicinal, there is no medicine that is just given to a patient without the liver research and its efficacy and its usefulness. So we say that marijuana or cannabis is not banned except to be used medically. It is banned for recreational things and also if you need
the lottery that you can apply, and nobody has been refused. And it's not everybody who's going to be given a carcinogen to try to ameliorate the pain or whatever, and cause more harm to the patient than that. That is against the ethics. And of course, every country has got its rules and regulations and law allowing research to be done, especially when you are going to do research on something that is not known, when you are able to use not just the lab titration and things like that, but inject it into living tissue. It is governed by law, so you won't have to. And the fact that we are giving the carcinogen, it means that there are safeguards already about how much you can give and why, and what other ingredients have been isolated in this. I think we are all covered. We agree that the outcome that rigorous research needs to be conducted on this, in all the 48 ingredients in this substance. So there is one wrong, and we all agree. So here, if I just need to set some other lingering doubts about whether this is not allowed or whether it's allowed, it is allowed. And whether you can do research on doing it is possible, it's covered by legislation. So it's a win-win situation. This is made us to concentrate on trying to find something. I think there are some specialist oncology units in some hospitals, in some hospitals. And so they are doing the best to try and to find some solutions. So we thank you for adding to the corpus of knowledge, the little knowledge we have about this. And so at least we can say, rigorously interrogate and all the possible ways of making this work. And so we all agree. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. I just have a follow-up question for clarity to the professor. You did say that the Section 21 application has not found favor in practice. Can you just unpack that for us in the committee? What do you mean when you say Section 21 has not found favor in practice?
Any other questions? Okay.
And Chief, if I could just comment on Jane's submission, where we're talking about research being done and medical research being done, particularly around cancer. There are two universities that I believe, if my memory serves correct, this Stellenbosch and Cape Town, who have just had research units open for cancer research. And that's one of the issues that we're talking about, and saying that if money has already been allocated for cancer research to be conducted, then this is an issue that they should be looking at as well. To what effect can we benefit those patients as well using the properties that are contained in the slot that we're talking about? And those three units have been done. We need to now ensure that the research that is going to be taking place, if it's going to happen, if it's been approved, then it is in sync with what is already happening at those particular units. But that there is money that has been made available for cancer research, as you said, really, in particular in our context here again in South Africa and what the needs are. So that I accept is absolutely correct, and that's why I said yes, you are 100% correct in that regard. The issue about the risk-benefit ratios that we always have, my point of mentioning the benzopyrene as being that precursor which is found in ordinary tests, we need to be able to separate this out. So let's remember, if we're talking about, we're talking about 85 cannabinoids and 489 different chemicals that are contained in any plant. And we want to extract, and we want to identify exactly what it is that is dangerous, remove them, take a look at what is beneficial, and put that into a formulation which will then bring us to the point where we now have a drug which is therapeutically acceptable, and where we can then measure the risk-benefit ratio to the point where it outweighs the risk, and as we will never get to any drug. My contention is any medicine that does not have a side effect is not worth taking, because it means not doing anything. So there will always be a risk. The point is we need to extract the dangers and the problem that we've got, and come up with a purer form that we can use. which is where we're talking about when we're talking about what you're saying, Section 21. In order to get a Section 21 pass, it's a tedious process. It's not that it's impossible, it's simple, and the Medical Control Council do issue it. A particular company that specializes in getting permits for Section 21 drugs into the country, and it's working, but it's a tedious problem. The problem is, as I said earlier, that what we found is that what they have included in those particular drugs which are available is not having the effect that people notice when they are using it with the smoke, because of the fact that they've left out the one which is the tetrahydrocannabinol completely. And unfortunately, it is part of the precursor, it is part of the synergistic effect that we get between the two, and that needs to be explored further. So that is where our research needs to concentrate. And then we would come up with a product which is not now just commercially more viable, but also therapeutically more beneficial.
All right, I think let's thank you for the presentation, which is very exposed the committee to some of the areas which we need to and my apologies in the last little comment that you were not part of the initial. My apologies on that. No, thank you very much. If you feel the enemies, maybe if they are services members, they have in go through, they have picked up something that they couldn't pick it up. But usually, I hope you won't hear us if there's a need. If there's a feeling that you come back, that's fine. But members will then do that in writing, send it to you. We will appreciate it then you do respond on time, so that we are then able. Because we are not just doing this presentation for the sake of doing the presentation. We have got a responsibility that is in front of us, as the committee of which Parliament would like to get the guidance from ourselves. Helen said that, thank you very much. You have said something very profound, and anything that does not have any effect is not working. I hope to organize but he has started assisting me this morning on something that I was interacting with him. But thank you very much. Members of the committee, can they see me? What do you ask to do with the meeting of the committee? Other people are asking. Thank you very much.
I'm not going to do that. Thank you, Honourable Members. We had the apologies, which is Honourable Ndaba with Office, Honourable Skipper with Office, Honourable Iman Sheikh with also Office, Honourable Iman Sheikh. He is his colleague. Unfortunately, he says it in more than one committee. You know that it's appropriation, it's police, it's health. I think she tried his best to be in, so those are the apologies that we are hearing. We will, now we are in the item, the consideration of the President's request from the Barcelona Declaration on the Human Choices strategy. Just to recap, we will remember that it was an issue in the last meeting. Dr. Gaines saying that he wrote a letter to the office for a request, and in making a follow-up, in fact, I think it's important that I refer to the committee in that one. I think there was just a challenge from my office that my secretary didn't give me the correspondence. And in checking, making a follow-up and getting the correspondence, is that in fact it was not a request, it was a letter of inquiry. But I wanted to be separated because I don't want that to be, it was a letter of inquiry from your secretary to my secretary. Up to today, I never had a letter that is coming from your office that is explicitly putting a request. And if I understand it, request and inquire through the two different things. Nevertheless, I just wanted to put that across to the members of the committee, because when we were acting on this matter, there was no correspondence in front of the members of the committee in relation to the matter. But secondly, honourable members in debating that issue, is that what I said is that fine, to respect the decisions of the meeting that was taken last time, that we will discuss the matter in the next follow-up meeting. I thought that it would be important that we dispense of this matter so that we don't have issues when we've got the, we don't have issues that are always going to take us. But there was that request, and we then that's why it is in the agenda, and then putting it back to honourable members on the basis of that, so that we are then not arguing or discussing having different views on a matter that is not in front of us. On an official, I thought that it is important, Honourable James, Honourable William James, to reflect in particular on the correspondence that you said it has been sent to my office. And the reason that was, I want also that to be clarified, the reason that then I then apologized is because when a letter has been sent to me and it is not in front of my, I can't say, it is your guys' fault, and it is my Columbus' fault. I make an example. The bus stop is my office, it's my responsibility to take that responsibility and apologize to members for that chair and to yourself for that confusion that has been created. But nevertheless, honourable members, we are in that chair, in that chair. On that point, I want to check any take from honourable members on the matter. As much of when a member not saying anything, can I get any members comment? Remember what it's important that I also remind members. Remember that what again was a conversation from the Democratic Alliance through the Dr. Wilmot James. Because also Dr. Vomik echoed that, is that the minister has written to presiding officers, which is the Speaker of Parliament and the Chairperson of the National Assembly. The Speaker of the National Assembly and the Chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, requesting to put the matter to plan. And then if then there is that process, the view from the chair was that it will be important therefore that to allow the minister to work. The minister is not only talking about explaining or putting the matter to members of the portfolio committee, but to parliamentarians as a whole, both in fact for both houses. And therefore a view from the chair was that we then have to allow the minister to take us through that. And I'm just recapping so that we don't forget where we left one another. And that was collected very heavily by the sponsor of the item.
Thank you for one of the shares. Unfortunately, I was not in a meeting by then. But seeing that the issue is still problematic for the Standing for the Committee to engage in, I would suggest that maybe Honorable James make sure that the letter is written to your office, and then maybe, and then he also, you also get to him together, maybe to discuss, you must ask, he will be presenting in the committee that as a person you are on. On the same level that you know what he is intending to present to the committee. That is my proposal, Honorable Chair. That one, he makes sure that the letter is written to your office, and then you need to discuss what he will be presenting to the committee. Thank you very much. Maybe we put it again in the agenda for the next meeting.
Thank you very much. The item is on the agenda. I recall writing a letter to your secretary. I will find the email and share it with you. I can't find it right now. I wrote a letter to your office, my name, not my secretary's name. And I recall doing that, and I have it on the machine, and I will pull it off. But all I wanted to do. Look, I'll just cut it short. The issue short. I went to London on personal business, but I went to visit an organization to discuss a number of issues in the health area. The organization is called Resolve UK, and it turned out that the organization is the secretary for the Global TB Caucus. The co-chair of the caucus is Mr. Adam Mastelet. And the initiative that he had was to get support from parliamentarians and public representatives globally for something called the Barcelona Declaration. Barcelona Declaration is a worthy effort to give voice to the need to deal with tuberculosis. Anyway, I don't believe anybody would object to signing the declaration. They asked me to get MPs in the Birmingham Parliament to sign on to the declaration, and so I said it would do so. I came back, I'm from the Democratic Alliance, and I got every MP from the Democratic Alliance to sign on to the declaration. They did so, they went into the website and did it. All I wanted to do was come to this committee and ask my colleagues from other parties to do the same. I've now made that request, it's on paper. It's a simple thing, go into the website, sign on. The Worldwide Declaration, our minister, national minister, is the co-chair of the Worldwide Body. That's it. And so I put it again. Colleagues, please sign on to this. And that's all I have to say about it. Thank you.
If you should remember, I made an input to the effect that the letter must be noted. Can I be considered that? I didn't make that particular input to say the letter must be noted and we did that.
No, thanks, Chair. We know the matter. But as we know the matter, reflects that the matter is before Parliament. And the relevant the minister that was given the responsibility, why the result? To mobilize parliamentarians regardless of their party political affiliation is the Minister of Health, because he was the co-founder of this campaign together with Nick Head communicated in no uncertain terms that it should not be a party concern, but two, it was communicated that the process must follow the proper parliamentary procedure. And therefore, if it is only us that are represented here, that's the parliamentary procedure. And the parliamentary procedure is exactly what the minister has done. He has requested the speaker of the National Assembly and speaker of the SUP to give him an opportunity to present to members of parliament. That's the parliamentary process. And that's what I will appeal, that we must allow that parliamentary process to take its final conclusion.
Now, thank you, Honourable Members. First, Honourable James, one thing that I do, because I want to clear the air. One thing that I do, and I do to research, is to check my emails every day. The last letter that I received from you was a letter that I was talking about, a letter something to do with HIV testing and whatever. That's the only thing that I did, only correspondence, and no for the fact. That I do respond to that to your correspondence. You saw the administration and your office can try and sort that out so that it doesn't tarnish my integrity as a chair of the Food Court for Locality that I ignore important correspondence. Because any correspondence from any member that requires a particular process, I have the responsibility to respond. In whatever way I respond, I wanted to put it clear that I would accept a request, an inquiry from your secretary to the secretary of the portfolio committee. I think the honourable members are still, again repeating the same response as the fact that was really pleaded to honourable members that let's then allow Minister to do that. What then would be the responsibility of the portfolio committee to the chair? Is that we ensure that that process of the minister addressing members of parliament will then take place, so that we are then able to ensure that everybody, because this is an important subject. It cuts across irrespective of our political parties, but what is important is that we must not then, yes, we are a portfolio committee and help, we have, but our responsibility is to ensure that if there are things that are to be in front of parliament, we are going to affect all members of parliament, it is our responsibility to ensure that that happens. And I'm questioning that. That we close this matter on that note, and then we are then going to be able to move forward. I think that was the only item in the agenda after the presentation. And I think we've come to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much, Honourable. Can we just have any time for the domain for something to do?
Thank you. Remember, I'm going to go to the...